Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're back on the road this April with our live show, Cocaine Cowboys. If you want to hear the story of Ireland's love affair with Colombian powder and those who made millions in the gold rush, limited availability remains in Belfast at ulsterhall.co.uk. That's ulsterhall.co.uk.
You can see why it might be more attractive to investors, because the chances are they're going to get it at a bargain price. They're going to get in plenty of tenants, so they're going to get a good return on their money. Within CAB, there might be certain individuals might be a little uneasy about publicity surrounding the sales on the basis that it might affect the eventual price they get. And whether or not the state gets the full market allowance the next time it's sold on, somebody will benefit out of it.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
The high-spec house of criminal Christopher Gitt Waldron is to go under the hammer later this month after the Criminal Assets Bureau settled their proceeds of crime case with the man they said made his money from selling drugs. Today, I'm talking to Eamon Dillon about the house on Killala Road in Cabra and about who might punt on a bargain. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. We're back sticking our nose into more properties.
Yeah, there's a bit of a sale on at the minute, it looks like.
Yeah.
Like a minimum reserve price of just over £1 million on five or six properties, I think, are coming up for sale fairly shortly, courtesy of the Criminal Assets Bureau.
Right. So we talked about, and we had a mooch around Ross Browning's house the other day. So today is the turn of Gitt Waldron. And he is a brother of David Waldron, whose case, I think, there's been no judgment yet on his case. His is the bigger amount, basically. It's that big, huge house down in Wexford.
And there's a house in Dublin and I think Leixlip as well, Kildare. That was an issue. It's a 2.9 million case is the figure that was being used in court previously. So, and that's been held up by the usual wrangles over free legal aid. I think one of the issues was a lifestyle analysis was one of the things, which is how much money do you really spend? So, you know, it's like, I suppose, an Eddie Hobbs working for a cab coming in and checking out your cappuccino factor.
You do that on me, would you not?
I do it myself all the time. That's, you know, No, I don't. I wish I could. I think a lot of people need to do it.
I would hate that. I mean, you'd have your various commodities that you spend money on, and there'd be the few glaring ones that would lead you to maybe reel it all in, wouldn't
it? They might say, well, I don't think money is your issue.
Anyway, Gitt Waldron, Christopher Gitt Waldron, and the Waldrons basically would have been associates of Eamon the Don Dunn. They're Cabra boys, brothers, and Gitt Waldron has a conviction in relation to a violent incident in a pub.
Yeah, they hunted down a guy they came looking for him, and he was part of, I think, four men, and they used, he picked up a pint glass and a stool, chased him out of the pub, you know, beat him in the pub and then chased him out and continued stamping on his head. So he got a prison sentence for that.
Yeah.
And he does have one for drugs back in 2008. It's a long time ago. But I think in the recent... The court order that was got by CAB that allowed him to seize the cab, they put out a statement last month about it. And in it, they said these proceedings, the Bureau provided evidence that Christopher Waldron funded the purchase of the subject assets through the sale and supply of controlled drugs in Cabra and Finglas areas of Dublin. So that was the evidence that they put forward. And it was the evidence that was obviously accepted by the judge if he granted the order for them to seize it. And also, it wasn't contested by Waldron, because he basically settled.
Yeah,
he got to keep. Now, it was mentioned in one of the hearings, it didn't go to a full hearing, but at one of the hearings, I think in last November, it was mentioned that it had been settled. There was no details, but it was mentioned that there was another property in Finglas, which was returned to him. So obviously a deal was done, or they felt they weren't necessarily going to be able to prove it, or it was a way of
Look, it's cheaper, isn't it? You know what I mean? Sometimes a settlement, anybody who goes into any civil proceedings knows that everybody's really looking for a settlement, aren't they? And in a settlement, I think each party has to walk away with something. You can't just have, or you don't get a settlement, basically. So often there will be a situation where you would be allowed to keep, perhaps the Finglas house was the family home. Did he live in this one, do you know?
Yeah, this one was, if you remember, one of our colleagues got the picture of him bare-chested, looking great, hanging out, having a cup of tea at his front grate.
It's kind of a meany headline on that one.
I can't remember it. I didn't write it. I just want to
mean whoever came up with it now will have to face their maker someday. And it was Christopher Walrus Waldron or something.
Right,
and he had carrying a few pounds.
I suppose it was a cheap shot. But then again,
shirtless. But anyway, let's have a look at this house. So there is a minimum opening bid of 275,000. So let's have a look at what sort of houses.
Now, it's an end of terrace house, and it would have been, I think, a three bed originally. Now, he bought it in January 2003, and he got planning permission for the extension that's at the back and at the side. And he got that a couple of months later in July, and it's effectively more than double the size. Or it looks like it's double the size of the house.
It looks like there's no garden left.
There's a little patio area, and then there's a granny flat, which is kind of a single room with a kind of a toilet and shower area. So that's, you know, someone can, you know, stay in there or whatever. So, I mean, it would certainly make it a lot more attractive to an investor, considering the prices people are paying for a single room that you have this house. And it's also, the extension is kind of a long extension at the back. And all that attic space is free as well. So presumably you could get plenty of tenants in there now if you're somebody looking to make a few quid. And
an investor would be probably the more likely to go for a house like this.
I think investors are going to go for these. That's what happened with the Burn House, number 2 Raleigh Square.
Yeah.
And that was bought by, a recently formed company, and also bought his house in Clondalkin. Now, it was never made public what price was paid for, but we understand it was $500,000 for the two of them, which is seems like pretty good value. And they're a company involved in the rental of properties.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a way of returning the properties back to the market one way or another. You know, it's shortage of housing, so it's not ideal. But it was something I was trying to find out about, because there was a lot of talk, particularly about Raleigh Square. I know Councillor Mannix Flynn made a very good point that, you know, this should be handed back to the state and they should be allowed to, you know, use it for helping people, you know, who have suffered from drug addiction, seeing as this place was at one point worth €1 million with money pumped in from drug dealing. So, you know, it'd be a nice way of rounding things off or squaring the circle, to complete the circle. But the whoever is appointed receiver under the Proceeds of Crime Act is obliged to get the maximum price they can. So they're actually, the legislation doesn't actually allow them just to hand it over
to somebody
for nothing.
Yeah.
Unless
the state kind of buys it and also there's complications, because where that house was in Raleigh Square, it's kind of a little cul-de-sac, and you know, they're probably, would it be ideal for some sort of a centre? I don't know. You know what I mean? You'd have to get planning, wouldn't you, for that?
Yeah, if you're going to do a change of use. Yeah. But I imagine, though, if it's a statutory organisation looking for planning, it's going to go through a little bit easier. And I mean, it's not like there isn't any shortage of the need for these services. I'm sure residents mightn't be too happy. But then again, they mightn't have been too happy with the previous occupants, so it might be a bit better. But look, either way,
it's... don't bring trouble to their own doorstep. That's the only thing. Well, so in actual fact, you can be in a position that if you have somebody living near you who's involved in this kind of activity, you can be pretty okay.
You can be, unless you want to sell your own house and move somewhere else, and you'll probably find it's unmarketable. So long
do you think
as
somebody like
there.
A family, do you think these kind of houses, like, I mean, knowing that Christopher Gitt Waldron, with his background, with his history, with his position, as the Criminal Assets Bureau have said, in the drugs underworld, that would might put off a couple of buyers, would it? Private buyers, I mean.
I think it might.
People be afraid that he'd come back and knock on the door, which, you know, that's unlikely to happen anyway, but...
Look, it's a question that a few people have asked me, you know, saying like, you know, are people frightened or worried about it? And I was trying to look into it, and there hasn't actually been any issues with previous properties that have been sold. I think you can see why it might be more attractive to investors, because the chances are they're going to get it at a bargain price. They're going to get in plenty of tenants, so they're going to get a good return on their money. I mean, like, while, you know, like Waldron's house is in good condition, and Ross Browning's house, and, you know, the lodge that his mother was living in are all in excellent condition and finished to a high standard. I mean, like, Waldron's house was estimated 430,000. And if you consider that, you know, houses in the area, a similar house in the area went for $3,400, like, that's a lot of money he's after, you know, losing. I mean, it's the potential loss of the 340, but you never get, you know, if you or I spent 400,000 on our own houses, you don't really get the value for what you spend on a house, you know, regardless of putting in your illegal ebony wood floor or something.
But if you were to buy a house, you know, in the condition he bought this in 2003 and put that amount of work into it, building work, I wouldn't even like to guess what that amount is now, because of course construction work is so expensive. I mean, you can just see the finish in this house that, you know, in the areas that have been finished. I mean, beautiful fitted kitchens, beautiful fitted bathrooms, marble tiling, bespoke.
I was showing this to
furniture.
A plumber friend of mine who specializes in bathrooms, and I showed him the picture from Ross Browning and Gitt Waldron's, and he said 2003. And I said, what do you mean 2003? He says, those tiles, they were popular in 2003.
Really?
And he's spot on. That's exactly when the houses were done up.
And so, the tiles he's talking about are kind of like white marble with splashes of sort of a cement colour through them, as if it's watermarking on the walls.
Yeah. I mean,
nowadays, everybody's going for these giant tiles. Imagine we're talking about this in Crime World.
I know, yeah. There you go. And then, well, let's not get into the tiling business.
No. But look, you know, in the end of the day, it would be a fabulous buy for an investor. And I mean, you're talking turnkey there, really, with that house. It's going to sell, isn't it?
I think it is. And I mean, it's in a sought-after area. I mean, you know, Killala Road in Cabra, that there's a lot of people would love to get in there. And there's plenty of investors who would like to get in there. They'll, I don't know, what they'd rent for, probably 2,500 a month or something, like, you know, or around that, I'd imagine. Probably even get a bit more if you're using the granny flat separately. And
this is the same auctioneer that's selling Ross Browning's house.
Yeah. And they've...
And the same auction, yeah?
They're all on the 25th, and they're all online, so...
So, what's coming up next then, I suppose? What properties are we looking at?
Well, there's also, well, as well as Ross Browning, the house he was in, the 3-bed red brick that we're talking about, and his mother's chestnut lodge, and the 3 acres, there's also 2 sites in Rush. One of them is down for, I think, 25,000, the other for 45,000. So there are plots of land that, you know, presumably people can, you know, put their mobile home on or something like that. So I have a feeling they're going to do far better than, you know, the initial guide price. And the same with the house. I mean, even the 3 acres, I was looking at price of houses in Garistan, and, you know, similar houses just to Chestnut Lodge were going for like 900,000. Mm. So if you consider that
lot...
Would
you rent those out, or would you think that's more of a family?
I'd say it's in those cases, people buying it, like, they're on their own land, you know, it's somebody who wants a bit of space, someone reasonably well to do if you're buying, or if you're up trading, or
an ideal, I suppose, for a younger family, and then with maybe older parents or something that want to downsize, and
maybe
they merge the sale of 2 houses and purchase that. And really, I mean, look, you can never say, but it's really highly unlikely Ross Brown's ever going to go near there again or anybody belonging to him. I mean...
No, he'd be daft in a way. And often, you know, again, another thing people would say is that, you know, would these guys not just get someone to buy back their property? And they'd say, well, that would be great for the Criminal Assets Bureau. They get to seize it twice. And double exactly. the money. Like, yeah. So it would be a pretty daft move to make.
But that was something that was said to have been done in the past, wasn't it? You know, they...
If no one else, yeah. And there was cases where, like... Liam Byrne's house in Clondalkin that was burnt out. I mean, that was an attempt really to deny, you know, anything of value to CAB. And there was, since then, there was a couple, you know, there was, you know, specific undertakings then sought by CAB against other people saying, look, we undertake not to make any damage. And of course, sometimes they get snotty about that. So, well, why would I wreck the house where I'm living and all this kind of stuff, you know? So there is that... There is that aspect where there was one time, if we can't have it, you know, neither can you. But I think now it's that hasn't happened in the more recent cases. Well, you know, it's, I think a lot of the time, I mean, even those, some of the burglary gang, there was, one of the walls had a house in Newbridge that was seized, and you know, that hasn't come on the market yet. But again, you know, it's a lovely cottage that was done up, and there's a rental income from it, and it's still being rented out. So presumably, the Criminal Assets Bureau are currently the landlords, and sometimes like they'll take their time selling it.
For a fade factor?
Sometimes, yeah, I think there is an element to that. And then other times, it's just a matter of getting through, you know, the conveyancy and just any legal issues surrounding any transfer of property.
So would, say, for example, you rattled along, is this an online auction? We'll have to go if it is.
It's an online, yeah. And yeah. You can watch. There's a watch button.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that because in case it's overloaded and we can't watch.
We'll definitely do that. But... like, would a buyer be entitled to know the background of a house, or is it up to you to sort of...
No, it's buyer beware. And I mean, there's a clear, like, even like in terms of, say, you know, there's a standard warning, like it's up to the purchaser to ensure that the measurements and, you know, and the description of the property meets what they think it is. So, I mean, you do have to go and look at the property. So, I mean, you're going to say, well, why is it up for sale? You know, what happened here? Or, you know, I mean, maybe an investor doesn't bother.
Yeah, but maybe, like, not. You know, a cautious buyer would probably do their own background check anyway. So, but maybe we are doing a public service.
I know that within CAB, I think there might be certain individuals might be a little uneasy about publicity surrounding the sales on the basis that it might, you know, affect what the eventual price they get. But I mean, in the long run, their job is to deny... Yes. Is to deny the assets to the criminal gangs, to deny them getting the profit. And whether or not they get the state gets the full market allowance, you know, the next time it's sold on, it will go for, you know, somebody will benefit out of it. And I suppose the people buying it are doing some element of public service as well. Like, you know, they're moving it on, getting it back into the housing system, not being left there empty.
Yeah, for sure. What happened to his Rolex watch, Git Waldron?
There were seven of them, and they went for 72,000. That was that big sale of watches by a different auctioneer last December, I think it was.
Yeah.
There was a couple of million quid's worth of watches went up. So he also had, I think it was a total of 77,000 in total. So I think there was about $5,000 in cash as well, as the 72,000 for the watches.
Feels like if you were buying a watch, you'd have less of a chance of Git Waldron ever seeing it on your wrist, you know?
I know, yeah, but it's. I presume that these watches, if they're bought a lot of the time by collectors, that, you know, they're only going to go for them if they're still in their box and still have their documents with them, so that, you know, they appreciate in value. I don't think if you're going to spend $8,000 on a watch, some people, I'm sure, will go out wearing them on special occasions, but I think a lot of people are just going to keep them in a box, in a safe. As an investment. And they are a good investment. And for people in the same game as Git Waldron and his brother, sometimes having a $10,000 or an $8,000 watch is a handy way of bringing $8,000 or $10,000 to someone in a different jurisdiction. This doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, it can swing the deal if you hand over the nice watch to somebody at the end of the conversation. So, you know, they're sought after.
When is the judgment expected in the David Waldron case? Because obviously that house, Darview, I think it's called, in Wexford, is going to be the big prize in that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's quite the special property. All right, you probably know it better than I do.
I've rattled around it a bit. I wasn't invited in or anything, but I have gone down and had a good look at it. And yeah, it's really, really attractive. It was designed by an architect.
And there was a lot of money spent on it.
A lot of money. And it was like, you know, it was sat into the landscape, if you know what I mean, as only an architect can do, because it dropped at the back down sort of into a valley, and then you had the views across the valley. And then there was a sort of a show jumping arena thing as well. They all loved their show jumping arena. Someone pointed out to me, which is fair enough, and I will always take criticism in regards to Ross Browning's indoor arena. You're hardly going to march horses around a concrete floor.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
I was looking at it thinking there was a concrete floor in that. I said maybe they covered it with something, or I don't know, but I doubt it.
You put machinery.
I should know more about horses.
You should know more. You're a rural dweller. But anyway, that judgment, when that comes back, there could be more properties. And likely, if that judgment comes back, that property will kick into next year before it sales.
It's some of them have gone quite quickly. Like, I was actually surprised to see how quick Good Waldron's house, you know, went up on the market. I mean, that was pretty rapid. I mean, when you consider that Ross Browning's was seized in June last year and has only come on the market now. Mm. And there's others that have been a couple of years and they're sitting empty. There's definitely more to come. I mean, like I mentioned, one of the burglary gang people, that their house in Newbridge, that's been seized. And I suppose they have to appoint the receiver and all the rest of it. And there's definitely, sorry, I can't think of them off the top of my head now. There's a bunch of others.
Well, of course, there's Mago Gately's house.
There's Mago, yeah.
Have they got that, or they haven't?
No, that's gone to hearing. And so we're waiting on a judgment on that as well. Like, there's a couple of judgments being waited on at this stage. I suppose they're the two biggest, Gately and David Waldron's.
Is there any houses related to the grow houses? They're usually rented, aren't they?
Yeah, as far as I understand, they're rented. I mean, like, we were able, with the recent kind of grow house operation involving Yan Yan Fan, there was actually properties mentioned, but they were ones that she had bought and sold on, and bought and sold on. And I think I think one of the targets is a flat in the Liberties somewhere, and that's not where she's living. And I think all the property transactions were then kind of used as a money trail. But there was no cannabis growing in properties owned by the gang.
As far as I can tell, is that the gangs tend to rent these sort of rural farmhouses. Well, there's nobody looking, because they use a huge amount of electricity, don't they?
Yeah, and it can smell. You know, it's pretty obvious. You don't need to be a sniffer dog to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them, and it's they're also in danger of catching fire as well, which is a reason not to use your own property. Because of all the lamps, the heat lamps, presumably you don't necessarily have the best quality of people who are left there. I mean, we certainly have seen in the past where people involved in cannabis grow houses, that the gardeners who are left there are usually pretty much indentured workers, if not out and right slaves who've been, you know, pretty much coerced into doing that job. So they mightn't necessarily have their heart in it. They have gone on fire in the past. So, I mean, it's as I said, it's a reason not to use your own property.
But they have to cover the windows as well. And what was that guy's name? The fellow who was actually stealing from the National Grid, Clinton. Anyway, he was caught with cannabis up in the Dublin Mountains, but he was running this grow house down in rural west of Ireland somewhere, had set up a beehive sanctuary on an island. It was a peculiar story. He was the guy who had all the Bitcoin. And
they lost the password. Couldn't find the password.
Yeah. In the fishing rod and all the rest of it.
A modern day version of the treasure hunt, isn't it?
That house that he had rented, and he was growing. Like, I mean, he was a really successful horticulturist who actually went to Locken House and studied horticulture.
Just
to get even better at it. He's out and about now, and God knows what he's doing. I just think he's a fascinating story. I'd love him.
We'll have to come back to grow houses, because it's a huge industry, and it takes a lot of capital investment. Like, so it's only kind of serious organized crime gangs that are into actual grow houses, and the amount of money they can make is staggering.
But this place was, like, you know, out the country road from a village and up a kind of a laneway, so you wouldn't see it necessarily from the house. But actually, like, when you're looking at it, you're going, how did nobody cop that looks a bit odd? Sort of nearly tinfoil on the windows, and, you know, no daylight going into it. And obviously, he had, I think, attached he had hooked up some bogey electricity thing to get the electricity. But otherwise, if it was a normal house, I mean, the electricity bills would be phenomenal.
And that's usually how they're caught is you know, because it's kind of the drain on electricity, or if they don't bypass electricity, the extra use is flagged up straight away as an abnormal use. They usually presume something's wrong with your meter if you're using that much electricity. And there have been cases where people haven't bothered. They've just gone through the meter.
And the landlords have often got in and found their houses an absolute wreck after.
Yeah.
I think it needs to talk about refurbishment. Well, listen, we'll have a look at the auction. And so everybody else doesn't need to.
Yes. Stay away.
Stay away.
We'll do a live blog.
we'll look after that. Okay, Eamon, thanks a million.
You're welcome, Nicola.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Clodagh Meaney. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review. Or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.